just wanted to say that instead of lightning talks, which we have plenty of room for submissions for, which will also take place in this room tomorrow and at 1300 on the last day of the conference, in lieu of that, I and a couple of other people decided that it would be a good idea to have Nadim answer questions in light of all the CryptoCat controversies that have happened or surfaced in the past couple of days. And Nadim has graciously come in to do that. The hashtag, for those of you who are watching, if you'd like to ask a question, is just pound Hey Nadim. And if you have any questions, just feel free to raise your hand at any point. I'll be breaking between questions from the internet and questions from the audience, and I'll be coming around to the microphone so you don't have to have Nadim repeat your questions. So, everybody, thank you for coming, and give Nadim a huge round of applause.
Hi. So, I don't know if you came to the talk or not, but I did clarify that there was a lot of problems recently with CryptoCat, lots of mistakes on my part, and so it's a good idea to be able to talk about it and address concerns and criticism and so on. I feel it's a real opportunity to do that. So I'll definitely take questions from you guys, but I just wanted, I saw this one on Twitter and it attracted my attention because I thought it was a really good question. So the question is from Twitter, with $100,000 in funding from the US Congress through Radio Free Asia, can't you hire a real cryptographer? And so, yeah, past... This thing is really... Wait. There we go. Okay. So, this is a really good question. We actually, CryptoCat, over the past year and a half, has, in fact, gotten exactly this amount in funding through Radio Free Asia, and actually what's now known as the Open Technology Fund, which is kind of like a nonprofit that funds cool open source tech projects. They also fund really nice projects like Tor, GlobalLeaks, Redphone, and TechSecure, the stuff that Moxie makes for Whisper Systems, and Gibberbot, and you know, the Guardian Project. So they fund a lot of stuff, just not just CryptoCat. And the funding that came to us, we published a report that says, you know, transparency report, but the funding that came went a lot to documentation, auditing. We got independently audited. It went to writing a specification for everything that we were doing, a threat model. I'm just trying to remember the deliverables. We had an outreach deliverable, and that's actually the reason I'm here, because they can pay for my travel. I wish I had the list of stuff with me. We did... Actually, I can just pull it up right now.
I knew you'd want to have your laptop to...
That was silly of me. I should have.
And also, if you have web pages or things like that that I should go looking for, just send
I doubt this will be the case, but...
Okay, but if you do, just feel free to send them out.
No props. Okay.
As you can tell, this is a very impromptu, spur-of-the-moment kind of presentation, but I think we're doing pretty well so far.
I don't even have it with me, actually.
Oh.
Well, basically, what happened was when we started getting this funding, CryptoCat was still almost non-existent, and instead of the money going to hire a cryptographer, it went to much more basic things, like actually having a project website, and actually having any documentation whatsoever, having translations, and there was a whole list of stuff that we did with that. And we're still doing stuff. Part of the deliverable was to have browser extensions, and we just finished that one recently, and we still haven't submitted it as done. And there's also one for mobile apps that is a deliverable. And we haven't even started on that one, and I think it's actually a bad idea to start on that one. For things I'll maybe if you ask me I'll clarify. no, but sure, you can ask me that question if you want me to explain. I will explain. But yeah, it's probably a good idea to hire a cryptographer. Obviously, that's what we want to do. And we've actually applied our next round of funding that we're trying to get will be solely to hire cryptographers. That's our only that's our only request from that group this year. All of the funding that we get is going to be directed at hiring crypto people. So, but when we got this funding a year and a half ago, all of it went to much more basic things. We didn't even have. So, for example, some of it went to developing the OTR specification and the OTR implementation, and this didn't even exist when a year and a half ago. So, a lot, it got all spent on very basic things, and by the time we started needing a cryptographer, it was too late, unfortunately. So, any other questions? Yeah.
I guess along the lines of this one, I mean, I don't want to side too much with these coulda, shoulda, and where did the money go questions. I think a lot of them are a little bit silly. But I would argue that hiring a cryptographer would be much more basic than having a website outreach or any of these things. I think that's one of the core criticisms is that you need good cryptography before you start promoting it to people rather than after.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you're right.
I think it was
honestly, at the time... No, you're right. So the question or the comment was, you know, a cryptographer is a basic thing too, and you should have thought of that earlier. To be honest with you, the Open Technology Fund, they approached us with a set that, you know, this is what we're ready to fund. And it included stuff like, okay, we're ready to fund an OTR implementation. We're ready to fund encrypted file sharing. We're ready to fund documentation. And at that point in time, a year and a half ago, it was simply not part of the mindset, and that's bad, you know, that's not, unfortunately, it was a mistake, but it was simply not part of the mindset, and the people, the funders didn't exactly, I mean, it's not up to them to bring it up, but it was just it's up to me, but it just wasn't brought up, and now we're looking to focus on that. So we thought really that the challenge lay mostly in implementation. And we didn't realize that implementation needed... So basically, instead of hiring a cryptographer, we hired code auditors. We got a lot of auditing done from like really good people. But so we got the code audited, but we didn't get the crypto audited. And so that's the mistake.
Jason asks, hey, Nadim, do you see CryptoCat branching into the realm of email sometime in the future?
No. look, we're trying to do one thing right, and we're failing, so... I don't think we're going to try anything ballsy like that anytime soon. And plus, there's a couple of cool projects for email. There's Mailvelope, and so it's Mailvelope is a similarly designed application. I assume they're also running into trouble. And there's a bunch of projects for making email easier. But look, we already have our hands full with just like chat. So I am not taking up anything else anytime soon at all whatsoever.
And on that note, just to get the question out of the way, hey Nadim, when will there be an Android iPhone app? I remember an ETA, but it is long past.
Yeah, this is a question I get 50 times a day. Actually, literally, I get this question at least 5 times a day. At least 5, like, not kidding. Via email, via Twitter, via Facebook. Nothing like I have had a deliverable, as I said, like we haven't received the entire funding because a lot of it is dedicated to mobile apps, and I am ready to not receive that funding and just keep pushing this back because I do not want to worry about this at all right now. This is just like the wrong thing to worry about at the moment. We've had a couple of discussions, we've had a couple of talks, and we've actually almost, you know, got a lot of people on board to work on it, and they ended up not really being the right people to hire. And right now, we just have way too much to deal with on our hands, and much more important things like not messing up anymore. So I consider that to be a commodity, you know, like something that really can wait. You know, you can until then. Like, one second. Until then, there's a lot of really good apps that you can use on the mobile phone, by the way, like CryptoCat. You don't need CryptoCat, actually, which is one of the arguments too, you know, and I agree with it. Like, Whisper Systems have made Text Secure and Redphone for Android. These are very good apps, and they're better probably than what CryptoCat would look like, because they have a lot more experience in mobile app development specifically. So if you want encrypted chat on the mobile, you can use Redphone, Gibberbot, Text Secure, Chat Secure, and these apps are available for both iOS and Android. You don't need CryptoCat at all for this kind of thing.
Did you consider a mobile as a platform when you started, or did you just straight go for PC?
Uh, I considered it simply because I thought, hey, this would be fun, but it was never seriously considered. But, you know, I kind of played around. But really, that was it. And the thing is, it was never something serious. It came up, obviously. The people like funding the development thought it was a great idea, and they still think so. I don't think so, for the reasons explained earlier. I think if it comes, it'll come maybe in a year or 2 years or 3 years. But really, there's a lot of better apps right now that are out there. And I think even if we roll out CryptoCat for mobile right now, it'll take a couple of years to be half as good as the apps that have been there for like 5 years now. So why bother? You know, just use the apps that are already there. They're made by good people. Why wait for CryptoCat? Just there's a lot of really good apps out there.
Hey, Nadim, what are your emotions regarding the exploit of your earlier versions of CryptoCat, such as the touted DecryptoCat method?
Oh, so the DecryptoCat method is the recent exploit that I was talking about. It's the one that's been in the news yesterday. It came out yesterday. So my emotions, is that the question?
Yeah.
Whoa, okay. Well, I don't know if it's that relevant, but so Steve Thomas, the guy who wrote the blog post and like the fund bug and everything, he is awesome, and I deeply thank him for what he did. I feel a lot of gratitude towards him. To be honest with you, his blog post is kind of, you know, aggressive, and it could be better than that. You know, it could be more, I guess, diplomatic, but at the same time, maybe I deserve it because the bug was really serious. So I don't really blame him at all and also I really cannot blame him because what he contributed was really important and necessary and vital and saved the ass of the project from a really, really terrible bug. So emotionally, I feel ashamed of the fact that I let the bug slip by for 7 months. It was my responsibility to catch it, so that's an emotion. I feel relieved that I get to explain how I feel. So that's another emotion. In terms of emotions, I feel frustrated at some people taking the issue too far and kind of attacking me personally. I think that's really just not nice, and I don't like that. It's kind of mean, to be honest. And yeah, in terms of emotions, that's all I can give you, you know, I guess.
Could you just give a brief follow-up, as a brief follow-up question? He seemed like he had attempted to claim the bug squashing reward, but for some reason didn't qualify for it. Could you give just a little bit of background on like when you first heard about him?
He totally qualified for it. Okay. He absolutely qualified for it. I had simply forgotten. That's it. Like he reported the bug, and I told him, I recall, I might be wrong, but I think I just posted like on the GitHub thread, the issue thread. I said, okay, cool, thank you. Let me know your name so I can put it on the, I didn't know his name back then. So because he just like he used his GitHub username. So let me know your name. I should put it up on the bug hunt like wall of fame basically that we have for people who find bugs. And I think he posted his name and I simply like got sidetracked by work. And I know it sounds stupid because it is stupid. And that's it. Like it took me forever to remember. And I only remembered when he posted his article. I was like, shit, I forgot to do that. So I know it sounds hypocritical, but really, it was an honest mistake. You know, you can believe whatever you want, but I had forgotten, and the moment I realized I had forgotten, I went and I put his name immediately. I put his name yesterday, just to clarify. And we don't really like the funding that we have doesn't cover the bug hunt stuff, or like the T-shirts or anything like that. But I sent a personal contribution, like you know, to say thank you to him, and it didn't come out of any funding. I just did it myself because I wanted to like honor the thing that, you know, you find a bug, you get a reward. But yeah, I apologize. I'm sorry. It's just an honest mistake. I had simply forgotten, you know, to put his name there. It was just a matter of editing an HTML document.
And then another question that I mean that I have for that personally. It seems like you are taking the approach of crypto has to be usable for it to be properly adopted. And it seems like all of your attackers are coming from you have to make sure your crypto is bulletproof before you put even, you know, a little usable tool out there. What are your feelings on, and if you just could repeat and expand on what you said in your talk earlier today, what are your feelings on usability versus, bulletproofness?
Okay,
to use a bad word of the code.
Okay.
And where do you stand on that debate? And what lessons do you want the people who think crypto first, then usability?
Well,
what do you want them to carry away from
obviously
this?
Obviously security, you know, bulletproofness is like, obviously security or bulletproofness is more important than usability, because if you have a really usable product and it keeps breaking, which is actually what we have right now, it's kind of a bad situation, which is actually what we have right now. So, but look, this is where it starts getting kind of nuanced and we start, you know, learning things and so on. First of all, the term bulletproofness. So even, you know, crazy awesome crypto products made by MIT, PhDs, and so on, like, they've been engineered, they've been made bulletproof for a decade, some of them. And you still find bugs that, you know, one project, there was a bug that was there for 7 years before it was caught. One other project, there was a bug that was there for 6 years before it was caught. And they're like remote code execution bugs. So I'm not saying this to save face. I'm saying this to explain that bulletproofness is like a mirage. So there has to be a point, and perhaps this point was chosen too early for our project, to say, okay, we've worked a little bit on bulletproofness, and now we need to start, you know, to have the usability side catch up. And this is something that we have to worry about more than any other project, simply because usability is what the project is about. You know, our project is about how can we address usability. And so if we don't address usability, the project is failing. So and then if we address usability, the project fails too. Do you see what I mean? Like, this is really the core of the problem. This is it. And this was pointed out to me by a guy who asked me a question after the talk, and I didn't know how to put it in my head, but like, this is really what's going on. If we make CryptoCat usable, we're marketing it too much, we're making it too accessible, a lot of people are using it, and they're, you know, and then you find a bug and their confidentiality is broken and it's insecure. And if you don't make it usable, you can't advance the project. So look, me wearing a CryptoCat t-shirt, that's overkill. I didn't even realize that, but I think maybe the t-shirts and the stickers are like just nonsense. But in making the software usable is part of, you know, what we're trying to do. I think you had your hand raised, guy on laptop.
Can you assess what manpower do you actually need to succeed in both areas, cryptography and...
What manpower do we need to succeed in both areas, security and usability? Well, the security aspect is what is harder. I can't be this simplistic. That's the thing. Like, they're both really hard in their own way, and it's really nuanced and messed up. So the security aspect is what's harder right now, is what I would say, because the usability aspect, it's like too good. You know, it needs to be worse. But the security aspect has suffered because of the usability compromise. And of course, because of random shitty bugs that I put, you know, like, not just the security compromise, it's not all romantic like that. But so in terms of effort right now, we don't need more effort in usability. You know, and that's not because it's easy. It's because we put a lot of effort into usability. What we need more effort right now is security, and the kind of effort that comes only with establishing a specification for multi-party chat called multi-party OTR, and we already hired like programmers and security engineers to audit the code, and you know, they didn't spot everything either, but we need to hire cryptographers as well to audit the code and the implementation. And the messed up thing about cryptographers, so we're already applying for funding, right? I already said literally 100% of the funding that I applied for the next year, none of it goes to me, all of it goes to buying the time of cryptographers. And so this is cool because it means we can pay people to work, because, you know, cryptographers have PhDs and they don't come cheap, and they're very rare, as I've discovered. And if they're usually busy with research. So,
Aesthetic asks, what are your current thoughts on Silent Circle?
Oh my God. Okay. So Silent Circle I have this complicated relationship with Silent Circle because I attack them a lot, and then...
Maybe a quick brief. What describes Silent Circle?
Okay, Silent Circle is an iPhone app that encrypts your conversations. Silent Circle is an iPhone app that encrypts your phone conversations. And also they have another app called Silent Text, I think, for SMS. And it's made by like superstars. It's made by the guy who made PGP, Phil Zimmerman, and a very well-respected cryptographer called John Callis. And they have like a team, and they have like Navy SEALs and like huge, crazy five-star team. And so I have a complicated relationship with them because I criticize them a lot, and then I fuck up, and then people are like, ah, you're criticizing Silent Circle a lot while you suck a lot more. Well, actually, newsflash, and I stand by this, even though I have fucked up so much, I have not fucked up as much as Silent Circle. Sorry, people on Twitter, sorry, that's the truth. Because, look, I don't mean to compare, all right? And I have fucked up a lot. But if you're asking me about Silent Circle, ask yourself, why haven't they issued a single advisory, one single advisory for the many vulnerabilities, including remote code execution and denial of service that have been found and documented in their services? Why did they censor the code that was published, the exploit code that was published, even though it affected libraries outside of their control or jurisdiction that were used by other projects? Why did the change logs that fixed these bugs mention no security implications whatsoever? There wasn't even a single tweet. Like, this is the difference. And again, this doesn't dismiss any of the responsibility that CryptoCat has. CryptoCat is still just as faulty, whether Silent Circle even exists or not. But when there's a bug, it's not that we're being heroes. We're just doing normal, honest thing. We publish a blog post. Like, that's like base thing you can do. And we're not even that good at it. Like, I publish a blog post and some guy accuses me of like, oh, the blog post was too focused on PR and less focused on actual security discussion. And he's right. You know, that's a valid statement to make. But the thing is, like, when you don't publish a single blog post, you censor exploit code, you don't publish a tweet, you sidestep along the lines, and at the same time, so, you know, CryptoCat gets accused a lot of marketing itself to activists. CryptoCat does not market itself to activists. It has never done that. Silent Circle does. It took them 6 months to open source their code, which is never updated. They sent one Git commit of their code and never updated it since. It took them 6 months to do that. I was being an asshole to them for those 6 months. And then when there's bugs, they don't report any of the bugs. And this is not just the issue with Silent Circle that I have. The prime issue with Silent Circle that I have is that when they do this, when they do these mistakes and violate security practice, no one criticizes them, or very few people criticize them. And the reason for this is because, and I stand by my word, is because the people behind Silent Circle are simply people with very good reputations for a reason. You know, Phil Zimmerman has a well-deserved, very good reputation. John Callis has a well-deserved, very good reputation. I am, you know, total shit in front of John Callis in terms of skill or knowledge, and I will completely acknowledge that. But the thing is, you can't treat people in this community. You can't say, oh, this guy fucked up and published, you know, had a huge remote code execution vulnerability and fixed it silently without publishing an advisory, not even a single tweet, and not even an update in the change log. And it's okay because he's Phil Zimmerman, or it's okay because he's John Callis. But when I do it, the world ends. The world should end when I do it, you know, or my world should end, not your world, you know, but, you know, I should be punished, and I should be attacked. My reputation should decrease when I do it, but so should theirs. And I find this very unfair. I find this very unfair. I find this very subjective. And this is not how you treat security software. You treat people according to their mistakes. If someone fails to disclose, you hold them accountable for failing to disclose. It's a very good thing. It means I still live in a sane society when people hold me accountable for my mistakes. But you don't get to hold me accountable. And then when a for-profit, closed-source project doesn't publish source code for 6 months while marketing it to activists, while failing to disclose any bugs whatsoever, literally, even when there's remote code disclosure, or, oh, it's Phil Zimmerman, he's my friend, I'm not going to say anything bad about him, but look at this like whiny 22-year-old kid. And that's the thing. Like, I don't have any social clout. I'm a 22-year-old Lebanese kid who came to Canada 4 years ago on a student visa, who doesn't have any background, well, very little background in security, and who's learning by himself. It's very easy to fuck with me because I can't fuck back. Even if I want to, it's impossible for me to do that. Phil Zimmerman, oh, he can fuck you back. You know, and that's... And that's and that is why I get shit and he doesn't. And to me, this is unacceptably unfair. And I will keep fighting. Thank you. You know, it's funny, like, you clap and people on Twitter, I have no idea what they're saying right now, but like...
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you transform into a werewolf when you go on Twitter? Nadim is a fag! Just like, not you, like, just people on Twitter are assholes. Okay.
I think people on Twitter so far have been pretty kind. You've got a bit of a zinger of a question coming up from Asher Wolf, but...
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. Speaking of critics on Twitter, but since I think this is a related follow-up question, do you think Bruce Schneier or DJB, Daniel J. Bernstein, would be able to help? They both seem like they're not dicks.
Oof. Oof, wow. Bruce Schneier and Daniel Bernstein are the best. Daniel Bernstein especially. Bruce Schneier is more good of an academic side, I believe, but Daniel Bernstein is like an implementation master. And he's more creative, I think, than Bruce Schneier, but that's just my subjective opinion. You know, I don't know anything. I've read like two papers in my whole life. So, wow. If Bruce Schneier or Dan Bernstein want to help, I would be blown away. You know, sure. Yeah, man. That sounds like the stuff of dreams, but yeah. Who asked that question?
Riptide Tempora.
Oh, Riptide Tempora is really cool. He's a very nice guy. I like him a lot.
So from Asher Wolf, we have a three-part question. One, when I go to CryptoCat's front page, CryptoCat, quote, CryptoCat lets you chat with privacy. In the blog, quote, CryptoCat is not yet fully tested and is experimental software, unquote. Why is this warning not on the front page? And she follows up, because as a potential user of your product, the likelihood of me reading through CryptoCat's blog for the warning is pretty small.
I understand. The warning is in fact on the front page. Let me just show you where it is. Let me just open the front page on my laptop. So I'm saying the warning is on the front page, and probably like Asher Wolf is just like pissed off and saying, oh, bullshit, it's not on the front page. And the thing is, she's partially right, because while it is on the front page, it's not really... it's not invisible. It's pretty visible, but it should be even more visible. But I have to say, it's not. It's pretty visible still. So, just it's right there. There's like a warning sign. It looks like a triangle with an exclamation mark. It's on the front page. Just look for it. It's in the middle. You just have to scroll down just a bit. You don't have to scroll down very much. And it says, CryptoCat is not a magic bullet. You should never trust any piece of software with your life, and CryptoCat is no exception. And then there's a full list of warnings, and you know it goes on and on for like 3-4 paragraphs. This is, you know, it's a warning, and it's there, it's on the front page. Thank you for showing it.
Yes.
Look, Asher and others, we opened a bug on GitHub today. You should go to the GitHub issues list for CryptoCat and check it out. It's bug number, if I'm not mistaken, bug number 377. And the bug is called make the warning more obvious. Yes, make website warnings more obvious. It's actually bug number 377 on GitHub. Maybe someone can link to it. So look, the warning is there, and we just need to make it bigger. But you know, it's not like we don't have a warning. It's a pretty, you know, visible warning still. Yeah. All right.
You don't have to make it bigger.
Well, maybe the comment was that maybe we shouldn't make it bigger. We should just clarify the words. I think why not do both? That'll be like a good thing to do. And also, I forgot to mention, the CryptoCat software itself has the warning on its login page. So if you just open CryptoCat right now, it's right there. You know, private conversations for everyone. Welcome to CryptoCat. Here are some useful tips. CryptoCat is not a magic bullet. You should never trust it with your life. CryptoCat can't protect you against XYZ. It's right there. So even in the software, it's there every time you launch it. I understand this can be made more obvious, but I just want to say, look, it's right there, and it's not, you know, invisible. It's pretty visible still. Okay.
Yeah. Next question from Bassdrum. Can you describe why the keying scheme changes so often in CryptoCat?
Because I suck. That's the answer. The keying scheme changes so much because I keep making silly fucking mistakes. You know, I'm not going to give you a fucking PR answer because that's not what my project is about. I stand by my project's honesty. Look, it started off as an experiment. It still is an experiment. And we wanted to do group chat, and we didn't have because no good protocol exists, no sufficiently good protocol exists for group chat, as far as I knew at the time. And so we experimented with some stuff, and we kept finding better stuff, kept improving, kept changing. And this is very bad practice, by the way. The real way you do it is that you set a standard from the start and you follow it and you never change it because you know it's you know you've tested it and it's fine. But we didn't do that, and that's the reason why we ran into those bugs, and that's the reason why we need like more, you know, better auditing. Look, like we did follow standards to an extent. You know, I say that I made mistakes. You know, we did use curve 25519. The implementation was written by a very respectable person, not me, someone else who was actually a cryptographer, by the way, who contributed the code. And the specification for the multi-party protocol is still there. It changes from time to time to improve things or to fix things, and that's not a good thing. That's a big mistake. That's a weakness, and that causes problems. So it's kind of like we're 90% not doing as best as we can, 80% not doing as best as we can, and that's way too much. That's disastrous still.
Just two quick comments. Do you transform into a werewolf when you get on Twitter? And Riptide Tempora says that the Twitter community prefers the term furries. And Asher Wolf also thanks you for answering her question.
Wow, cool. Thank you.
And I guess another just quick follow-up from me, unless there's somebody in the audience that would like the microphone for a second. It seems like just this whole example, you just seem like you're under constant attack.
Yes, I am, and it sucks.
Yeah. This isn't providing a very good example to other
No, it's young... not, and it sucks. Make it stop, seriously.
But what would you have to say to somebody who might have the skill? What would you say to a person who's in...
Please assume good intentions. Like, the thing is with these kinds of attacks, they're necessary. And you shouldn't, like, when I say stop, I don't mean stop completely. But there has to be a forum. Like, there has to be a medium of discussion, like I am trying to establish here, which is not like Twitter, you know? Like, Twitter is insane. Twitter is psychologically destructive in these ways. Not always. You know, Twitter is useful and fun. I use it all the time. But there needs to be a way for people to be honest and upfront with each other about mistakes and about communication, about how to improve. And, like, the way we have right now, it's not it at all. It's not it at all, and it sucks for me, you know? Like, I just want to come home and play on my Nintendo, but I can't because I'm fucking up the world and everyone hates me, you know? And it's my fault. It's not Twitter's fault, obviously, but Twitter exacerbates this. It makes the problem worse by spreading animosity and misunderstanding, not because people are bad, but because the communication medium is awful. First off, you're limited to 140 characters. Second, people have, you know, and you can't really discuss anything. I can barely discuss, you know, what I want to eat with my girlfriend in 140 characters, let alone crypto science. So, sorry, my laptop is okay. Second, you know, ego is really important to a lot of people on Twitter. And, you know, to me, sometimes I feel like my ego is attacked on Twitter, and that's because I'm not perfect. And it's a human response, okay? So people get insulted easily on Twitter. And that's not because they're bad people, but because the medium encourages it. The medium plays on this part of our brain, and that's not good. This is why, you know, this is why when I answer these questions like this, I have more methods of communicating my message to you. I can speak at length. I can answer your questions while giving demonstrations. You can see my body language, which explains the tone in which I'm answering you, which, you know, guess what, is not aggressive, you know? At least I don't think it is. So really, look, some of these bugs, especially the one yesterday, for example, in CryptoCat, they deserve a lot of anger. And, you know, funnily enough, the people I expected to get angry, the people who usually really, like, let me have it, were silent. It was very, very surprising. But the thing is, we're trying to have intelligent discussions over a medium that encourages personal attacks. Especially, you know, it makes you anonymous, it makes it fun, it makes it ephemeral. You know, you tell someone, like, he's a fag who's killing children, whatever. Like, I'm sorry, I don't mean this to be a homophobic slur, but I'm just, like, giving an example of what I hear on Twitter. What we should get a better medium, seriously, because this really doesn't help. And to be honest with you, you know, you might call me a wuss, but like, it's really hurtful to me personally, you know, to be subjected to this for 2 years now. You know, I make mistakes and I deserve to be punished for my mistakes, but like, this is psychologically abusive and hurtful to me, and it really puts me in a lot of pain. It can happen on mailing lists too, and you know, sometimes I'm an asshole on Twitter too, and sometimes I'm an asshole on mailing lists too, especially if I already don't like the person. And this is because I am just like everyone else in this room. I'm also part of this thing. You know, to be honest with you, I think I'm trying to not be part of it more than a lot of other people I know, but I'm still part of it, as much as I don't want to be. So maybe, you know, maybe if... I just wish we all had like the time and money to just travel and meet each other face to face all the time, but we don't. And maybe we can have like Skype hangouts or something. I don't know. Well, we shouldn't use Skype. Skype sucks. But what I'm trying to say is that the current situation is very bad in terms of communication. And what ends up happening is really like a lot of very, very bad things, bad disasters, and a lot of misinformation, a lot of miscommunication, a lot of bad feelings. Sometimes I deserve the criticism. In this case, I definitely deserve the criticism, but we need a better medium.
Hey, Nadim, is there any plan to eventually integrate with YubiKey or something related for long-term identity verification?
This doesn't sound like a bad idea. I think Chrome specifically offers some hardware APIs, the browser, Google Chrome. So I think it would be easier there. Is this question from Tom Lowenthal?
No, it's from Riptide Tempora.
Oh, cool. Because Tom Lowenthal asked me a similar question once. Currently we're working on something, you know, a lot sort of more basic, like getting SMP done. The guy who made the SMP pull request made it like 7 months ago, and I still like keep either delaying it or commenting something on it and then forgetting about it. But that's not because I'm lazy. It's just I'm busy with other stuff on CryptoCat too. Sure. We do have already some issue open on GitHub for hardware integration of that sort. Please feel free to contribute to it, and I will review your code and pull it. Hopefully, it won't take 7 months. It usually doesn't, by the way. Usually, it's like a week. But we also need to get like more simple stuff done, like SMP, you know, easier authentication first. The thing is, we also want to get like long-term storage of keys done, but like doing this securely in the browser is really hard. We don't know what we're doing, so we need to do a lot of testing first, and I really don't want to fuck this one up, so we're still testing.
Are there any plans on adding a check.torproject.org type feature, quote, your CryptoCat is out of date, unquote?
I've actually thought about that, but the thing is, what I keep getting worried about is code injection. So let me explain the scenario to you. I was thinking about that this morning, actually. So the question is, why don't you say, like, you have a version of CryptoCat installed, and it notifies you automatically, hey, your CryptoCat is out of date, it's really bad, you should update it. The thing is, I wonder how this could be done. I think it should be done. I think we should do this soon. But the thing with CryptoCat is that the client is designed to never load any external resources at all, whatsoever, unless it's XMPP standards, XMPP communications. Aside from XMPP communications, not a single external resource is ever loaded. I mean, maybe I'm mistaken, but I don't believe I am. So adding an external resource that's not an XMPP message, an XMPP stanza, would be something that I just need to look into a bit more. But it's definitely, you know, a useful feature for sure. Yeah.
I'm curious, why did you decide to pursue CryptoCat in the first place? I mean, what was your sort of background inspiration?
A lot of reasons at once. So first of all, really honest reason, my girlfriend broke up with me and I was feeling lonely and I just wanted something to make myself feel better. And so I started a chat program. Like, it wasn't encrypted. I just started like a regular chat program and I thought, oh, this is fun. And then the reason I started playing with encryption in a chat program was because I was in the shower and I thought this could, I was just showering and I thought, hey, maybe we can now make crypto really accessible by using the web browser crypto APIs. Are they there yet? Can we use them? Are they mature yet? And so I went out of the shower and I went and checked after getting dressed, of course. And I looked up some stuff and I realized that they're not mature enough. I did a lot of research, but it felt like really exciting. Like, wait, like, you know, this is cool. I should do it. And so I started working on it and like having encryption stuff. And this is where I started like paying a lot of attention to the aesthetics because I wanted to make it usable. Obviously, I felt, you know, that was something interesting to work on, but also because of a really like romantic personal love for this kind of aesthetics. Like I grew up with, you know, video games, Sonic the Hedgehog for Sega Genesis and that kind of stuff. And it personally, it means a lot to me. I know it sounds like a stupid reason, but this is like, it feels like kind of, you know, I get to do an art in a kind of weird way. And it's meaningful to me that way. Very, it's kind of a spiritual thing. So, God, that sounds like incredibly hipstery. I'm so sorry. It's just, it's true, but it's really hipstery. That's just the aesthetics. It has nothing to do with the crypto. So it was called ChatCat at first. But then the person I was dating who broke up with me said, you know, we should call it CryptoCat. And so I thought, okay, sure, that sounds like a nice name. And so that's what happened.
Awesome. And then one last question from Todd Tempora. Are there any plans to implement random conversations or nicknames in a later version?
Random conversations or nicknames? Sure, that sounds easy to implement, and yeah, that doesn't sound like a difficult feature at all. It sounds like, you know, 30 minutes of work. It doesn't seem to have any, as long as you use a cryptographically secure random number generator for the chat name and nickname to generate them, it should be, you know, pretty easy. Sure, if people really want that feature, I can definitely get it done, no problem. It takes like a day or something.
Here's a great question. Hey, Nadim, what can the average developer with some free time do to help CryptoCat?
Go and find the cryptographer. just help me because that's what I'm doing. I'm an average developer with free time to work on CryptoCat, and I'm like going, hey, are you a cryptographer? Are you a cryptographer? Basically, because I suck, you know? Come help me not suck. So that's kind of a silly answer, I know. I mean, you can like look at GitHub and look at, so we have a lot of open issues on GitHub, right? So you can just go on GitHub and check the open issues and see which one you like and work on it and submit a pull request. And if your pull request isn't like super shitty code, I'll accept it and pull it. And please, please, please use tabs for indentation. I fucking hate spaces for indentation. Come on, like just use tabs for indentation in your pull request. But really, you know, that's one thing you can do. But seriously, like even though it sounds silly, go petition, like write an open letter, do something like, hey, cryptographers, you're all assholes. Come make cryptography accessible because you suck or whatever. That's not my message to cryptographers. Please, I love you all. Come help me with my project. But, you know, like, basically that's my very, very miscommunicated. Okay. Moving on.
This is more of a comment than a question, but I'd like to hear your reaction to it. CryptoCat has a noble goal, but you dance around them as an experiment. I'd rather see an RFC for a design consensus versus a functional
test. That's what I've been saying all this like Q&A session. That's what I want. I am not dancing. I could, in fact, dance while saying the answer to you as I am doing right now, if it helps. But really, this is what I've been trying to say all day. That's why we need a cryptographer. I am not dancing around the issue. I get accused of this all the time. And it's like fucked up because I'm loudly and clearly saying, and I already got like a business card from a cryptographer today, which is great. I'm definitely going to get in touch with him later tonight. Look, we need an initiative. We need to get cryptographers, put them on a plane and meet them in like a city somewhere like New York or Montreal or whatever, like somewhere close. And we need to sit down and we need to like formulate like a, you know, Fellowship of the Ring style thing. And like, you know, go and throw the ring in Mordor, Mount Doom, and like, dude, this is really the only way to approach this. And I'm not dancing around the issue. I'm clearly stating where my skill ends and where I need help. And
I want an RFC for multi-party encrypted chat more than anything. This is, and the thing is, the fucked up thing is, while I can do, you know, while I can write, you know, not discussing security, like just, you know, in terms of code quality, while I can write good code, while I can design a nice interface, while I can manage a project and, you know, verify pull requests and write documentation and all this stuff, I can do like the stuff that regular programmers can do. And, you know, I'm good at that. But the kicker is there is a point where you need to dance around, in fact, not to avoid the issue of the RFC, but to attract attention to it. And this is something that, this is why CryptoCat still needs to reach out. Because unless we do that, this RFC is never going to get the cryptographers it needs to be implemented. Let's take more questions. This is actually really good.
Oh, okay. A couple of questions from further back in the stream. The OS X app is nice, but why isn't there a standalone Linux deb or Windows binary?
Volunteer to make one, and I'll release it tomorrow. After reviewing it.
Yeah.
and failing to find the critical bug in it, obviously.
Okay. Go on. I don't know how you're going to handle this one, but hey, Nadim, the most secure TLS methods aren't supported by the most common browsers. Wouldn't debasing CryptoCat from browsers solve this problem?
The reason we use browsers is simply to, as I mentioned, I see you must have not watched the talk earlier today that I gave, but there's a reason we're using browsers. I mean, debasing CryptoCat from the browser is definitely something that's occurred to me for a while. But the reason we're sticking to the browser framework is that while it's dangerous, you know, while, for example, perfect forward secrecy, or forward secrecy is a better thing to say, in SSL is not supported in all browsers, it's still getting supported more and more, you know, but it's not perfectly supported. There's a lot of like little potholes, and there's like much bigger holes. For example, random number generation in the browser wasn't really supported at all. Cryptographically secure pseudo random number generation in the browser wasn't supported at all until very recently. But the thing is, CryptoCat had a lot to do with pushing the people at Firefox to add support. So CryptoCat has something to do with serving as a test case for improving client-side security in a browser. And I say this, you know, I believe this. I believe this is a place where we're doing something good. And we stick to the browser not only because we're improving the browser in small ways, you know, not responsible for everything, or even more than just a few small things. But we stick to the browser simply because it offers just the best accessibility ever. You know, the browser works on every platform. There's multiple sort of choices for it. It even works, you know, the code that you run on your desktop browser can theoretically run on your mobile browser, although I wouldn't recommend it at all in the case of CryptoCat. And also, finally, as I said in my talk earlier, the point is to make this kind of encryption as accessible, if not more accessible, than Facebook chat. And this only happens through the browser. It doesn't happen. This is the medium for accessibility. This is the medium that we need to bring crypto to eventually in 100 years when things are better, not now. Now we need to work to make them better. But eventually in 1 million years when things are slightly better, this is the medium that we need to target because this is the medium where the accessibility matters most. And I know this is controversial and shitty and browsers suck and Nadim doesn't know what he's talking about, blah, blah. But like, this is what I believe in. Okay.
Who is your favorite Adventure Time character and why?
Is this Griffin Boyce who asked this question?
No, it's O.M.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a Griffin question. My favorite Adventure Time character... Adventure Time is an amazing show that I love. Why am I even... I completely... Okay, this is...
This is what happens when you open it up to the internet.
Okay. Adventure Time is like the best show ever made in the world. I love it so much. It's very deep and beautiful and... Anyway... very artistic. Anyway, so I really like the Ice King because he reminds me of my own social ineptitudes, and I like kind of feel for how I kind of feel bad for him sometimes. And I like Lumpy Space Princess because she's really funny, and I like Lemon Grab because he's just a gift of a character. And I think Lemon Grab is on the autistic spectrum actually from the way he acts. I don't know if any of you are familiar with this amazing show, but it's a really nice show. Anyway, any other questions? I see people are leaving in droves. I'm sorry.
It's we're approaching the hour point, so that typically happens. Yeah. Another random question. Hey, Nadim, why do you feed the trolls?
Because I am flawed as a person, and I get... So basically, what happens is I have a thing that's a bad thing, which is I sort of... I can't take attacks on my perceived dignity or honesty lightly, and I feel the need. You know, sometimes I feel like an attack is unjust, and which is exactly what trolling is, and I just feel like, hey, that's unfair, and I don't like things to be unfair. So it's bad and stupid and really, really stupid, just very stupid of me. But I should stop. You're right. This is stupid of me, and it's actually inexcusable. Yeah.
Just one question that I had. What's the question that you always want to be asked or think everybody has on their minds, but something that you never get asked that you wanted to?
Sure, that's a nice thing to say. Am I a sociopath who's deceiving everyone? That's the question I think I wish people would ask me. I know it's strange. Do I have bad intentions in mind? Am I deceiving everyone so I can build a product that doesn't work but that gains me media attention? Is that exactly what I'm doing? This is because I feel like this is what a lot of people believe. And it really it pisses me off so much that this is what people think I'm doing, because this is not at all what I'm doing. No, this is, I mean, you obviously wouldn't take my word for it if you distrust me to that degree, but the point of the project is, as I discussed before, it's not to market towards activists, it's not to make a foolproof solution, it's simply to make crypto accessible, and it's a long-term thing. And look, also something else. Another question I wish people would ask. What is the process of open source security, Nadim? The process is usually smoother than that, but not far smoother than that. I feel that people just forget that a lot of the projects that we use today, a lot of them that are very important to us, a lot of them that are now like the world standard in privacy technology or encryption technology and so on, went through the same phase that CryptoCat is going through today, and they went through the same horrible things that CryptoCat is going through today, the same bugs, the same counter-reuse bugs, the same entropy miscalculation bugs, the same bits of security are too low bugs, the same UI, you know, code injection bugs, the same, you know, all of them have appeared repeatedly in projects today and in projects before. This does not excuse CryptoCat, but this is simply to point out, you know, while we still make terrible mistakes and I need to pay the price in order to have any sort of legitimacy, this is how open source security works. You know, to a big degree, and this is bad because of our focus on the usability aspect. We've, believe me or not, indirectly, got a lot of people to use it. I never expected so many people to use it. I started the project because I had a fight with my girlfriend, but we've gotten a lot of people to use it, and we're stuck in a situation where if we lessen the accessibility, the project fails, and if we increase the accessibility, the project fails. And this is a situation, you know, I'm not saying, oh, this is unfairly imposed on us. It's our fault. It's my fault. But this is where we are right now, and this is where, inevitably, a project that has security, the project has usability in mind ends up in, especially if they make our mistakes and don't focus on security early on, even though they decided to focus on it only like a year later. So... the fucking up part is a part that happens, and it doesn't mean it should happen, but also at the same time, this is how open source software, for better or worse, a lot of the time is made. And in 10 years, in 20 years, a lot of it has ended up advancing not only itself, but the platform on which it depends. And you know, this is what I want to do when I'm 40, when I'm 50, this is what I want to do. So... It's. I'm not going to get there if, you know, Matthew Green doesn't help me out. Matthew Green, if you're listening, Matthew Green is a really nice cryptographer, and I wish he would like dedicate more time to CryptoCat because his opinions are really cool. But yeah, basically, I hope I'm being in any way understandable here.
The question, which I hope you'll refine a little bit for me, is, you know, CryptoCat's obviously captured the imagination of a big segment of the people that are interested in having their communications be secure.
There's a cryptographer out there rolling his eyes at the words capture the imagination right now. But go on.
Precisely why I'm asking the question. And I mean, it has given you a platform for at least elevating... I've asked you this question in another form earlier, but in elevating user experience as important to getting cryptography adopted. If, and I have two questions this one, if CryptoCat is nothing else other than a platform for making people more aware of this, do you believe that that you've achieved some success with that? And second, now that you have this platform, is there an additional responsibility for you on there that you didn't have before?
Yes, there is definitely an additional responsibility on me that I didn't have before. Absolutely. This is why I'm standing here right now. This is why I am in Germany, of all places. This definitely exists. Honestly, this kind of responsibility, 60,000 people are suddenly using your chat app at 22, not so easy to deal with. And I'm not equipped with enough experience to deal with it, unfortunately, although I'm trying very hard to learn. I have a lack of experience that is very natural for someone of my age. However, have we succeeded in broadening the message, just the message, not the actual thing itself of encrypted communications? Yep, we have. But that's not really saying much, you know? People can talk about it, but you know, we should. That's not what we're not trying to get, you know, we're trying to get people to talk about it, and that's nice, but we're actually, like, what we're really trying to do is, you know, get it done, you know, more of.
Hey, Nadim, what do you think of the NSA's secret intelligence programs? Can we solve this problem with crypto?
No, cryptography will not solve these problems. I think, of course, you know, obviously, I think the NSA's secret surveillance programs are an affront to international democracy. I am not an American citizen, nor will I ever be, but I still believe that they affect me as a contributor to the international dialogue, democratic dialogue, civil dialogue that the 21st century demonstrates. Will crypto solve them? No. This is not how you solve this kind of thing. It's like saying... it's like waiting until you're sick, and then it's like waiting until you have cancer, and then, you know... Or sorry, it's like waiting until you have skin cancer and then getting chemotherapy. But, you know, like, the best thing to do is not expose yourself to the sun in the first place too much, right? Or wear sunscreen, you know? Better to wear sunscreen than to chemotherapy for skin cancer later. And this is what I feel right now. It's like people, we have the skin cancer. I know this is like a dark analogy, but I can't think of anything else right now. Sorry. We have like the skin cancer, and we're just like doing chemo, and like chemo is this risky thing that doesn't always work, and we're thinking, oh, this will solve our problems, but really we should have been wearing sunscreen all this time. And so this is the analogy that I'd like to use, you know, with this sort of thing with the NSA. We got here, or the Americans, the American civil society got here because of, you know, the whole at least I think so, the whole 9/11 scare and just an encroaching view that this kind of surveillance is vital for protecting interests and for protecting trade interests and foreign interests and domestic interests and all interests, you know, wild card sign interests. And so the best thing to do would be, you know, don't just think that stupid, you know, broken crypto like CryptoCat is going to help you. Or heck, I wouldn't say even that, you know, that the better products or the better projects would help in this. They might help slightly, they might act as shims, but really the only thing that will help you is addressing the problem at its source and not, you know, doing chemo all the time or whatever. Sorry. Yeah.
Hey, Nadim, if you could go on holiday anywhere in the world, where would you go?
Japan. I've always wanted to go to Japan. Tokyo looks really nice from the photos that I've seen. To be honest, I think if I had a time machine, I would go. Why am I answering these silly questions? Oh my!
Because you opened it up to Twitter. That's okay. What happens.
If I had a time machine, I would go to Beirut in the early 90s, which is where I grew up. This is, to me, is the most beautiful place.
Can CryptoCat help nurture an atmosphere devoid of nepotism and pedigree within the open source community? within open source security, rather, I'm sorry. Or is it immutable?
Who asked that question?
I'll give you three guesses.
I have no idea.
Riptide Tempora.
Oh yeah. Obviously, yeah. Sorry. I'm trying my best. I don't know if I can do it because the environment is stronger and more established than I am, unfortunately, although I really would hope so. But the thing is, I contribute to it too sometimes because I'm not perfect, but I'm trying harder than others too, I would say.
So I heard at your earlier talk, someone said, like, every time someone uses CryptoCat instead of Skype, you've made some small improvement.
But you should speak into the mic so people can hear you.
I'm not so good at that. Someone at your earlier talk said it's a win every time someone uses CryptoCat instead of Skype, because at least the security is a little bit better.
Sure.
But there's a very old idea in cryptography that bad crypto is worse than no crypto, because if you have no crypto and you know it, or like if you know that the NSA is watching, you can use other counterintelligence techniques.
I understand.
And I agree with that. And I think that in the same way that users can't be bothered with a difficult interface, they can't tell the difference between bad crypto and good crypto. I mean, I'm not an ordinary user. I'm quite sophisticated, and I can't tell that.
I understand. So in case people aren't, because this is a good question for Twitter to hear. So the question was, hey, so someone said earlier that if you're using Skype, at least it's better than using, of using CryptoCat, at least it's better than using Skype, right? Because at least you have some level of protection. Skype has none. But, you know, that's not necessarily a good thing, because what if CryptoCat is broken and you're giving the false sense of security, whereas in Skype you're not giving a sense of security at all? That's the question. So first, in the case of Skype, and I'll broaden this because obviously I don't want to limit your question to Skype, but in the case of Skype, Skype actually claims encryption. Skype says, oh, everything is completely encrypted, secure, end-to-end, we don't see anything. That's actually on their website, and it's been on their website ever since the beginning. So they are, in fact, dealing with you a lot worse. But let's say Skype didn't have that warning. Let's say Skype claimed, they said, everything you do on Skype is surveyed. And CryptoCat said, everything you do on CryptoCat is slightly safer, okay? It has encryption, it's in the name. And so would it be worse to have that, to have this false sense of security? Probably, because it depends on the use case, you know, to go into semantics. It depends on the use case, because if you're using, you know, if you want to talk to your friend, you know, about dinner plans, whether Skype or CryptoCat, and just want, you know, to keep your dinner plans or anything simple like that, just private for your, to respect your individual rights, then it really, it doesn't matter. But the thing is, I understand that the more dangerous use case is, the more dangerous use case is someone being lulled into a false sense of security. And yes, that's definitely shitty, definitely a problem, definitely more dangerous. So, but the thing is, like, there, you just have to, like, you can't, you have to fix the bugs and you have to improve. You can't just stop because, you know, you only realize there's a false sense of security once the bug is out there. Sure, when you're doing an experimental project, you kind of realize that you have it in the back of your mind all the time. But do you stop iterating? Like, I know this is a frustrating answer. I know, right? But it's just you need to keep iterating. Do you have anything more to say? Like, I don't want to like make you feel like I didn't answer your question. Later, okay, sure. But this is like very valid.
This is semi-related to the NSA Prism question, but and I hope you don't mind me bringing up a conversation that we had earlier. But
sure.
You had a very interesting take on people who are, you know, rallying against the state and people who believe in anarchy. And I was wondering if you could just sort of expand on that certain luxury that people who rail on about the state in modern Western
democracies. I was talking to you about, Nick wants me to clarify on a conversation I had with him earlier because he thinks it contributes to this somehow. But I complained to him that, you know, in hacker circles in the US, there's a lot of people who identify as anarchists, and I was complaining, you know, like, it's kind of a luxury to be able to identify as an anarchist when you're in a hacker circle. And the reason why I said that is because, look, like, I actually come from an anarchy. You know, I come from Lebanon. I was born the month the civil war ended that destroyed, like, the country, killed 200,000 people. Displaced millions into other countries. That's why you know that there's more than twice, like, more than half of all of Lebanese people are not even in Lebanon because of the civil war. And this is why I'm not in Lebanon, you know, indirectly, because I was, and four wars happened after that, you know, and I came here. But the thing is, look, when you don't have a state to call your own, which is the case for a lot of Lebanese people, And you're, I mean, I rely on the Canadian government's whim to secure even basic like housing or education or a job or prosperity or like to have any rights whatsoever. And if it weren't for this like process of being able to have a state sort of like have an immigration policy where they take people in and you can, you know, have a study visa and you can study and then you can get a job, like I do not have the luxury of saying smash the state, because I was in a smashed state, you know, and I understand, look, I understand that I'm going to anger a lot of people by, and the accusation would be that I'm misunderstanding anarchist principles. Lebanon is not a good example of an anarchy, but really, I mean, it's not an example of an anarchist utopia for sure in the, you know, Goldman style or whatever, but it's still a bad anarchy. It's an anarchist dystopia, if you will, but it's still one. And for me, I just felt like I'm someone who, if it weren't for immigration policies, I wouldn't be here today. I wouldn't be working on CryptoCat. I would lead a miserable life with no prospects whatsoever and no potential at all. And which is exactly what I was doing before I came to Canada, by the way. I actually was homeless like until very shortly before my trip to Canada, because my house was bombed. And Canada saved me from this. This is not because Canada is a, you know, the only hero in the world, but like this is just because of immigration policy, you know, and stuff like that. Those kinds of policies, they matter a lot, you know. It's, I don't have the luxury of saying I don't care about these policies, because if it weren't for them, I wouldn't be here.
Why is user experience so rarely focused on in crypto? GPG and key management is a special kind of hell for most of us, and I can absolutely agree with that.
Sure. In my talk earlier today, I suggested that maybe having cool projects, there's already one that exists called Mailvelope that can focus on key management and on making PGP specifically easier is a worthwhile thing to do. In my case, I decided to focus through a series of events on chat, but that doesn't mean that my focus is the right one, you know, or the only right one or whatever. Just take it up. This is a good project. You know, you're going to go through hell, I guess, for it, but it sounds like fun, you know? It's not necessarily, well, you know, maybe it sounds meaningful as a philosophical answer. Okay.
And then, yeah, actually, I wanted to get your opinion on GPG and public key encryption and webs of trust and things like that. Did you even study that or think of that as an approach for CryptoCat? What, do you have an opinion on that in general?
I think maybe,
do you send encrypted mails?
I think it's possible to use PGP as a substitute for a multi-party chatting protocol. I'm not sure. This is like a thought that I had recently. Maybe you can just send PGP messages and use PGP keys, and then you wouldn't need a protocol. It would just be like sending multiple email messages to each other, but in a chat context. And so this might be interesting. I wonder if we can look into this. I just always thought that chat was more interesting than email. That's really like just a very purely subjective preference. That's really.
You don't think that's a generational thing?
Maybe it is. Maybe it is. Maybe it is a generational thing. Email is more useful because it gets stuff done, but chat is more enjoyable because, you know, you're talking to someone and they're answering you, and you can type emoticons, and you know it's fun. That's really it. And I guess by using that description, I do in fact validate it as a generational thing.
Hey, Nadeem, why do you need a separate protocol for multi-party chat? Just use two-party chat multiple times? Asks Arthur Edelstein.
Well, that's definitely an interesting suggestion. It would in fact itself, even though it would need a very small overlay of another protocol, it would need the formulation of another protocol still. It would be a very small sort of thing to add on top of the existing protocol. But heck, this is something we could use too. Maybe if we can, I mean, there would be, for example, so I can think of one thing. So if we do this, there would have to be a way where we can check if all the messages that are being sent to each of the parties through the repeated use of this two-party protocol are the same message, right? Maybe you can fake messages. The cryptographer in the room is like nodding at me. Cool. I pleased a cryptographer today. This doesn't happen often. So that's, you know, one thing. And that would necessitate a lot of changes in the a lot of additions, you know. So it's not the reason it looks easy is the reason I fuck up, because I'm like, easy, 15 minutes of code. Haha, I fuck up everyone's life. Haha, fun. So, yeah, this is my daily life, by the way.
What do you think about Enigmail?
Enigmail is a plugin for Thunderbird, that just for people who don't know. It's just a plugin for like mail clients, and you can use it to use PGP and send encrypted emails to each other on a mail client. So Thunderbird is cool, but it needs to be a lot more usable. And the thing is, the problem with Enigmail is that it integrates into a pre-existing product, and that messes up the usability part, to me personally. The thing with CryptoCat is that it's built from the ground up to only be encrypted chat. And I think in order to not mess up the usability aspect, the only thing you can do is build up the product to be from scratch an encryption product. This is, you know, crypto mail, you know, mail duck, whatever, you know, mail puppy. It has to be from the scratch something that's made for this particular purpose. Otherwise, you're merging two products together, and to me, that fails to meet the usability thing that I have in mind.
I think that's pretty much it. Is there anything that we haven't addressed that you wanted to address? Or think that your critics might wanted you to have addressed? Because I think we covered all the big ones.
I'm glad that I got questions, and I'm glad I got to express myself, because remember to be nice to people, because they're trying their best. And, you know, yeah, that's it.
Last call for questions from the audience. Miles, you got anything? Okay. Yeah, I think we're at the 70-minute mark, so I think you've been standing for more than an hour, so we should probably give you a break. Thank you so much cool. for all this. If you could give him a huge round of applause. thank you to the internet, and yes, tomorrow we will have regular lightning talks. If you want to give a lightning talk on something, find me, go to the SIGINT website for information on how to submit your 5 to 10 minute lightning talk, and that's about it. Thank you.